How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy, what day is it even? Wednesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. I've been a little bit under the weather the last couple of days, and also have been on the radio out here in Calgary the last couple of days, so the content has not been free-flowing from these particular parts, but that changes today as we look at a wild night in the NHL, plus some huge rumors in the world of boxing and the WWE continues to build up some momentum heading towards the King of the Ring. So, a lot to get to. Let's get to it and talk some hockey. So, the Stanley Cup playoffs continued with one of the best games of the playoffs so far. That was last night when the New York Rangers had an absolutely incredible win over the Carolina Hurricanes as they pick up a double overtime victory. And this game had everything. It had pace. It had physicality. It had excellent plays. And it had five freaking periods. And in the end, it has the Rangers up 2-0 in this series. The Rangers are ahead, but I think they have more things to clean up in their game than the Carolina Hurricanes have as this one shifts back to Raleigh. I thought the Rangers played pretty atrociously defensively. Way too many wide open looks, like the middle part of the ice, like that whole high danger area that they have there. That was wide open a lot. The Rangers defensively, I thought, had way too many breakdowns, left the middle part of the ice way too wide open, and that caused quite a few problems for this team. And they were lucky their goalie was absolutely on fire because he stole this game, I thought. It was just the defensive breakdowns, I thought, were the biggest part for me for the Rangers. That was the one where I was like, okay, they might win this game, and they eventually did. But they need to get this figured out because this is not the way you win maybe even this round, but certainly not next round or the round after that one. But Shesterkin was just tremendous in this hockey game. And then offensively, I thought they didn't really control things as much 5-on-5 as they should. And I know that that is a common gripe with people with this team, but I still think that, like, I don't think it's as bad as some people say, where they are just power play merchants, and that's the only way they get their offense. It's better than that. But this is still a team that was not able to sustain a whole lot of pressure in the 5-on-5. And look, it doesn't cost them. They're up 2-0 in this series. And that power play is lethal. Kreider is, as they were talking about on the broadcast last night, Kreider is one of the best, like, net front power play guys in the National Hockey League. And he is someone who really kind of gets this thing going. But it was a quiet night for Panarin. Zibanejad, I thought, was tremendous. Like I said, Kreider was good. But just offensively, there just wasn't enough to really get it going for the Rangers. I thought a bright spot for them, because I've been shitting on them for 3 minutes now, I thought the depth forwards really came to play. Like, Cooley had a really good game. VC had a really good game. I thought those players were the ones who started to really step up and get this team rolling a little bit offensively. For the Hurricanes, boy, they had their chances. Jarvis had that one in tight where he makes the move to go backhand on the short side. And Shesterkin, I still don't know how he was able to sprawl out and have enough strength to be able to come up with that save. But I like how Carolina gets the defense involved, and they've been doing that for forever, right? With Slavin and Shea, you have Burns in there as well now. But I like how they were able to do that, and they had a lot of players who had really good games. Again, if you're just watching this analysis, you're going to think that Carolina has the 2-0 lead in the series, not the Rangers, but there's a lot of players on Carolina that I liked in this game. I thought Aho, the way he was aggressive in attacking the net, I thought he was good. They just have a lot of pieces that you really, really like. and they just were not able to get it by Shesterkin. I thought the one thing that they didn't do that they might need to do, they didn't really get a whole lot of pressure in front of Shesterkin. It was working that you get the drive-by deflection by Orlov. They were getting some pressure. They were getting some traffic in front, and the pucks were going in, and then they kind of went away from that a little bit. Now, credit the Rangers for kind of taking that away a little bit, but I thought that was something that they needed to do. Like, they were getting their chances in front, but they weren't getting the bodies in there to create a lot of that traffic. One more thing from the Carolina side of this thing. I owe Freddie Anderson an apology because I was saying he was a liability for this team and a real red flag that could keep them from winning. Freddie Anderson was phenomenal in this hockey game. And they, like, especially on the penalty kill, the Rangers had some real grade A chances and weren't able to break through. Why? Because Freddie Anderson was freaking awesome in this game, and he came up with big save after big save, and it's just a bouncing puck that he just can't quite close the five hole on that ends up giving the Rangers this lead. So for Carolina, you're down 2-0, but you're going home. You have a very clear home ice advantage with how wild that crowd can be. So it's certainly not time to push the panic button yet if you are Carolina. And for the Rangers, I don't think you can just be going into this being like, well, we're up 2-0. Everything is just fine. There are absolutely things that this Rangers team needs to work on. But I would be surprised if that's not the quietest game Panarin has of the series, and if he comes out in game 3 and really makes a statement. In the other game that happened last night that also went to overtime, Stars Avalanche. What a devastating loss for Dallas. You are up 3 at home to start the series. Have a chance to set the tone after eliminating the Stanley Cup champions. A chance to eliminate the ones who won it before them in Colorado. And you let it slip away. That feels like the one that is really tough to bounce back from a Dallas Stars standpoint. But again, what a tremendous hockey game. And just what a night. We got a couple tonight with Boston taking on Florida as I'm recording. And then Vancouver, Edmonton. It's going to be a blast. We keep saying it every time. But the playoffs in both sports are delivering in ways that are just the absolute best for sports fans. And now we might be getting a mega fight in boxing. Let's talk about it. So, after the Canelo Alvarez fight, and I tend to do, we do the fight breakdown on the Monday, kind of let things breathe, and then we do the fight on Friday, where it's, okay, what are the fights we want to see coming out of this? And I will admit, Terrence Crawford wasn't exactly where I thought it was going to go, but apparently the Saudi General Entertainment Authority is already pushing for Canelo to face Terrence Crawford, which is insanity. And look, sports washing is at its finest right now because people are saying, yeah, we know they're bad, but this is amazing. We love what they're doing in the sport of boxing right now. And so I am going to come off as very complimentary of this matchmaking, but I do just want to state that it cannot be overstated. The atrocities that this government have committed and the human rights issues that they have, there is no way of looking around that. Now, if you are looking to break into a sport that overlooks some of that stuff, boy, boxing is the place for you, considering some of the people who have been at the top of this sport at various different points in its long and mostly illustrious history. But what the Saudi government is basically looking to do right now is something that a lot of people wanted Dana White to do for a very long time, and that's become the UFC of boxing, where they are just putting together, like, every problem boxing has, they're just throwing money at it and letting everyone else just kind of, that network doesn't work with that network. Don't care. Here's $120 million. Oh, different promoters. Don't care. Fight in front of me. They are absolutely bullying their way through every bit of tape that the boxing world has put up over years and years and years of corrupting itself into oblivion almost before having a resurgence here. And now this would be the peak of it. And look, they already have a relationship with Terrence Crawford. They're putting on his fight in Los Angeles on August 16th, I think. So they already have that relationship. And now Canelo, he is seeing all this that's going on, and he is not a dumb man. And he is like, yeah, I'll fight David Benavidez. He's going to be $200 million because he sees the money that is being thrown around by the Saudi government and he knows where he can go and get that. And so I think that combined with the Saudis also entering into Los Angeles, or at least stateside with their promotion of that fight in August, it really does seem like it is all meshing together. And Canelo now has this thing that he can really take advantage of and take his already incredible, like he's made almost $1 billion in his lifetime in fighting. But now he could really just kind of top that one off with this potential. And, it is, I can't even wrap my head around what this fight could be. Like, there is obviously a relative size edge for Canelo Alvarez, based on the last fights that these guys have had, about 20 pounds. And, like, that can be made up. You know, like, Canelo can come down, Crawford can come up. I have never, I'll be honest, like, I've never even really considered this as an option. Even when I've had these guys side by side, for the most part, in boxing pound for pound rankings, I have never really even considered this in terms of a fight. But what it would do for Canelo's legacy is really interesting, because this would be the second number one versus number two type. Like, I think given what he did on Monday, Naoya, in a way, is still number one pound for pound in my books. And it'll be tough to knock him off of that particular throne. But the winner of this would have a real good case for it. But this would be the second, like, top three, top four pound for pound guy of the time that Canelo would be fighting in a mega fight. He has the Gennady Golovkin fights, and I don't think those enhance the legacies much for these guys. Certainly for Canelo. That, I think, is looked more as a black eye. So this is a chance to have a fight and a rivalry that defines a fight and a rivalry that defines the career of Canelo Alvarez, and is the, when you think of Canelo, you think of this fight. Up to now, frustrating as it may be for him, a lot of people will think of the Gennady Golovkin fights, but this one would be the type of mega fight that would really get him that tight, or get that thing kind of wiped away a little bit. I'm not explaining this very well, but though, on the other hand, the naysayers, and there are many out there, especially after this last fight, which I was really frustrated by, because I thought, like, I like Munguia as a fighter, and I think he was a worthy adversary, and Canelo just won. A lot of people are saying it should be Benavidez or bust for Canelo Alvarez, and he is a mandatory challenger for, like, 18 of the titles that Canelo Alvarez has, and so you can see where, excuse me, I'm very choked up about it, you can see where people would be getting a little worked up about this, because this was a fight that people wanted this last time, and now it's the fight they want in September. And now it seems like Canelo is just kind of ducking Benavidez as much as he can if he's going into this fight, which is a lot easier to say if Canelo's fighting me. But if he's fighting Terrence, by God, Crawford in a, like, number one versus number three, or number two versus number three, or two, however you have the pound for pound ranking set, if you were doing a Mount Rushmore of the pound for pound fighters in 2024, those two cats are on it. And they aren't far apart either. This would be, it's almost perfect for Canelo. And it's almost perfect for the Canelo conspiracy theorists out there. Because you would say, well, Canelo now gets to, like, he gets to say, look, I'm taking on a pound-for-pound great in this fight. Pound-for-pound great who fought once in the last 500 days. And also, you know, is 20 pounds lighter than me. But still, I'm fighting a pound-for-pound great. And so I think the Canelo haters would be able to come out and say this. But for me, this is just fun as fuck. And I would have no problem with building this up and getting this thing really excited. Again, there's a lot around it, but I think if Canelo is going to not fight Benavidez for whatever reason, if it's a challenge that he and his team are worried about, if it's another Mexican v Mexican thing, if it's money, if it's whatever, this checks a lot of boxes that boxing fans would be really interested in. And it is just insanity to think about. All right, let's shift gears and move now to the world of professional wrestling, as the WWE put on their pay-per-view in France and then followed it up with Raw. Let's talk about it. The WWE was in Lyon, France for Backlash, and a star was born. And that star was the crowd of Lyon, France, who brought it from bell to bell. An unbelievable night from this crowd that made this a must-see show and made it feel like a must-see show. And this wasn't a must-see show. It was a fine show. But I'm not rushing out to tell people, like, yo, you gotta go check out Backlash and mute it because the wrestling was so good. Like, you gotta basically, like, if you can turn the screen off and just listen to the crowd for 3 hours, then you'll get a real experience of what this was like. This crowd was insane from the get-go. And they start off hot with the what ends up being a street fight between Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa going up against Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. And this was a fun plunder match. And then you get the spot where Tongaloa debuts. And the TV hit it well. But a lot of fans do a fans video show that the referee bails him out. So for those who didn't see it, the referee is counting one, two, and then looks like he's been shot and just himself out of the ring. Because at that moment, Tongaloa is supposed to come up and pull him out of the ring and do the reveal that I am here. And instead he is, not there in time and basically comes up as dude has to steal a wrestling term now, yeeted himself onto the floor. And it, so like when you watch it without knowing that, it's hilarious. It worked for the TV cameras perfectly. Like if this was just on a soundstage with no audience there, then it looks perfect and it set it up really, really well. And I knew going in, I didn't get a chance to watch this live as we talked about, but I knew going in, like, there is a botch of some kind in this. I was like, oh, I want to see what this is all about. And then it was, oh my God, okay, that's not it. What did I miss? What? And then you go back and find it, and it's, oh, goodness me. So I think there's a lot of interesting ways to do this, but it is, they are accomplishing the goal of making Solo Sikoa look like a badass. And I've said from the beginning, for a while now, this is the star you want to make out of this. This is the guy that you want to be building out of this thing, is Solo Sikoa. And now having the Gorillas of Destiny beside him as kind of the muscle really is intriguing and can really get you thinking that there is something fun going on with this one. So I like this. I like this a lot. And if you wanted to do just a full to steal the WCW team, or faction, I suppose, if you just want to do the new blood and it's Solo, it's the Gorillas of Destiny, and it's Jacob Fatu, sign me up. And then it's fucking Rock, Roman, and the Usos at War Games. Like, yeah, take my money right now, 100%. But if you wanted Jacob Fatu to be more on Roman's side and attach them that way for a bit of guerrilla warfare, I think that's a way to do it too. So there are a lot of really intriguing options. But this was a surprise that not a lot of people were anticipating. We've been hearing for a couple of weeks, hey, Jacob Fatu is debuting this week, and he didn't. And so I think a lot of people kind of worked themselves into thinking that was going to be the thing. And then when it didn't, it was perfect because he was, this was better. So, well, not better. I like Jacob Fatu a lot, but this was a different surprise, and it's okay. Now you have a legitimate tag team here on SmackDown in the Gorillas of Destiny. I would get the tag team titles immediately. I know it's heel versus heel. I, like, don't care. Fatal 4-Way, Triple Threat, whatever. Have these guys win the tag team titles and be those guys. Like, I think you need to really strap a rocket to these guys and legitimize them early. And that was my one critique of this match. I didn't think Tama Tonga came out of this looking like a real badass. I thought, like, quite frankly, compared to Randy Orton, he looked a little small, which I wasn't anticipating. But, he looked fine. But I don't come out of this being like, man, watch out that this is a star. And I have thought that about this guy at times, but you just kind of come out of it like, yeah, he's part of the muscle in a muscly group. So we will see where they go from that. The triple threat match for the women's title. This was fun. Naomi and Tiffany both come out of this looking really good. And Tiffany, like, I am buying all of the stock. She is going to be on the cover of video games. She is going to be women's champion soon and multiple time. Like, she is going to be, I think, a super duper star with WWE. She quite obviously has the look, but the athleticism is incredible. I've said before, the acting and the character work, could you do a little bit more, but that's going to come. That kind of stuff is going to come with time. And I think being with the main roster group now and learning from those people is going to help her out. The one who kind of looks a little generic in all of this is Bayley. As I think she is still trying to figure out this babyface character a little bit and what direction she can fully go to. And so that would be the one critique of this. And then you get to the women's tag team match, and it had its struggles. And again, like I said, I had heard some of the internet buzz. I didn't see anything, but you hear, oh yeah, basically a botch fest. And yeah, Jade Cargill just isn't made card ready. He's like, oh my God, she'd kill someone? Like, what are we doing here? And then you watch the match, and like, she was not, like, Steamboat Flair, this was not. But the internet reactions to this, I thought greatly overstated how bad this was. It was not great, and there was definitely a spot where they just lost it. But I don't put Jade Cargill at the top of the list for people who needed to do better in that. I was really surprised. And again, I've never wrestled, so this is just from where I am sitting to say, well, who screwed this up? But when things are going a little bit sideways, you would hope that the veterans in the ring, with Kairi Sane and with Asuka, would be able to get this thing back on track. And they didn't. You would hope the referee would be able to get things kind of going a little bit. That didn't really work. And it stumbled, and you get it back at the end, and you get the visual. That finish was insanity with what Jade Cargill did, where it's the powerbomb, it switches to the electric chair, she jumps her out, she catches her in the full Nelson, does the boom, and then KOD on top for the win. So there is still work to do for Jade Cargill. And one of the issues is the matches that she gets into aren't the matches that are going to help her develop, but they are the best to help her character grow and build what they are looking to build. So it is a tricky spot, and you could very well make a compelling case that she should have been wrestling on NXT and getting some of this learning there. But I do think being in the ring with more veteran talent is going to help grow this character, and it is going to help kind of move them in the direction that they want to move in here. So it is a tricky spot with this character. I love that they got the titles. I was disappointed that this one went the way that it did, because this was a match I was really excited about. And these are two teams that I kind of thought we would just do like fight forever to have them have just a bitter rivalry to reestablish the tag team titles. And at least Act 1 wasn't the best. Then we get the world title match, Jey Uso and Damian Priest. I thought that, like, the crowd made Jey feel like a superstar. And this was a step up from Jey's WrestleMania match for sure, but it still didn't really hit that gear that you wanted it to for a world title type of a match. So he still has a little bit to go with his big matches, so to speak. But you come out of this, like, Damian Priest, there was a touch too much interference to establish Damian Priest as like this real badass. And so that's a little unfortunate. Like, the one is fine. McDonough coming out, maybe even the foot on the rope thing is whatever, but having them both out there, it made it feel a little bit too chicken shit, heel for me. And Priest has been like on character, in character has been coming on and being like, hey, you guys fucking cut it out with that. And so that is that is like a good thing for sure, but I do think that this was a match that needed to do more for both guys, and they just didn't really hit that. But you do have to keep Jey a little bit strong, because the babyface side on Raw is a little soft right now. But I just thought that they tried to protect him too much and didn't focus on building up their champion enough. And then Cody and AJ was just real fun. Again, the crowd was incredible, and both guys delivered one hell of a wrestling match. And this was a great start to Cody's build up as the champion. And if they wanted to do a couple more of both of these title matches, fully co-signed. And then you get to Raw just quickly. Gunther and Sheamus was everything you wanted it to be. Again, I watched this on delay, had to go to YouTube to find it because the Sportsnet feed cut it off with like 3 minutes left in the match. So that was disappointing. Just on the on-demand feed. I'm sure on TV you got to watch it fine, but watching on demand, which is a service I pay for, it got cut off, and that's really infuriating. But if and when Gunther wins the title, if Sheamus ends up coming around as the first challenger, doesn't bother me at all. The Drew McIntyre stuff was weird. Like, I understand him being pissed that Jey Uso is in for him, for the King of the Ring, kind of continuing that spiral. But then when he leaves and CM Punk comes in and he's like, yeah, Drew, come on out. Like, you guys can tweet at him and let him know that I'm here. And then he doesn't. And it's just this awkward promo and it ends. It felt very strange. And I, like, for WWE, I kind of understand what they were going for, and it kind of worked, where it's just like, hey, will he or won't he? Will it show up? No, okay. Not everything times out perfectly all the time, so it made it feel more real, just in a disappointing way. But that continues to build, and Punk threatened Scotland as a thing, and if Punk is ready for June, and McIntyre's ready for June, then yeah, you have to do that match. And Punk, I think, will be smart enough to recognize that for one night, he needs to be the bad guy in that match, because that crowd will not be on his side for that particular encounter. The two NXT performers get the wins in the King of the Ring with Lyra Valkyria getting a victory and Dragunov. And I thought they both looked good. Like, Dragunov and Ricochet, you knew when that was scheduled. Like, well, this is going to be incredible. And it was. And the crowd was with them the whole way. And Valkyria, the crowd wasn't necessarily there for this one as much. But her coming out to save Becky from damage control puts her in some type of a program already, which is fun. And it puts her already on, like, this main event level. It's like what Bruce Pritchard said on his podcast. How do you make someone become a main eventer? Oh, you put them in the main event. How do you want, like, you want someone perceived as a main eventer? You put her out there with main eventers, and you see what happens. And I thought she more than handled herself. So, I have really high hopes for this character. I like Valkyria quite a bit, and I think that this is a great addition to the Raw women's roster. And Dragunov as well. Like, that video that they played was just so perfect for this character. And I've said before, this guy feels so over the top to me that sometimes it takes you out of it a little bit. This reined him in the perfect fashion and was exactly the type of thing I was looking for. Overall, a fine episode. They made the King of the Ring feel like a big deal. Kofi's promo that he cut on Rey Mysterio was awesome until the end, where it's like three words that everyone knows are still true. New Day rocks. It's like, oh, we were right there. But this was still a great promo. And, like, overall, Priest feels like a big deal. No Bron Breakker on the show was a little disappointing. Like, have him go out there, beat the shit out of someone for a couple of seconds and move on. But he comes out there, he's like, hey, why am I not in the King of the Ring? And Adam Pearce is like, you know what? You're right. On with the show. That felt a little bit strange, but you're trying to get a lot of new faces over at one time. So, that's going to do it for the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. We're going to have more coming up tomorrow, probably. More hockey, more basketball. We'll continue with some of the wrestling stuff. AEW has a show tonight. Maybe we'll get into that. So there's always a lot going on. As always, follow me on social media. Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Primetime Klein. Twitch.tv/PrimetimePK. And you can email the show, couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe, and I'll talk to all of you later.